We can begin with the Buddha's words on loving kindness.
This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, and burdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be happy. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, are meeting them, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child. So with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world.
Okay, cool. Now you can all shuffle around and get comfortable. Hello. My glasses are battling with my headset. That's right. Cool.
Yeah.
So I'll just let everyone get ready, get seated, get comfortable. Okay. All right. So.
Okay.
Very, very good to be back. This is my first talk here since the beginning of the rains. Since the beginning of the rains, since the end of the rains, rains retreat period. So it must have been at least July would have been possibly the last talk I gave here. So, myself and another monk, Ajahn Santuti, who many of you will know. Ajahn Santuti is now the abbot of Wat Dhammayanaram, which is up on Scott Road, just around the corner. So the two of us are living up there now. There's a third monk who's also who's in Cambodia at the moment. It's actually the old Cambodian temple there, but myself and Santuti are sort of running the place and making sure it's all looked after. And we also have a Monday night group as well, which a lot of you come along to, so that's really nice as well. So, there should be some more information about that on the BSWA website. I think Nicholas is putting up a few notices for that, if you want to keep an eye out for that. So, So we're all here to practice a bit of Tuesday evening meditation. So I should probably say something about meditation. I guess it became last Monday last week. You might realise I'm recycling a bit, but that's okay, because I actually quite enjoyed the talk I gave last week. I was talking a little bit about the silent mind, the silence and meditation, and the role it plays and the way we relate to it. So I guess most of you have probably read the Basic Method of Meditation by Ajahn Brahm. So he talks a lot about the whole path from right up to the deep states of meditation, I'm quite happy just to stick to the basics here and not go too much into the later stages. But I thought that the state of the mental stillness, the silence, is a good place to is a good thing to talk about. So Ajahn Brahm talks about the first two stages of meditation, where first we let go of the past and future, and then to finally let go of all those thoughts that are just there in the present moment, to get towards this silent mind. And I feel for me, I don't really need to sort of separate the two too much. I figure that once the past and future more or less let go of, then you're 90% of the way to a mind without thoughts. As I say that, I'm sure everyone has issues with thoughts. You know, they want to have this mind free of thoughts. But to sit here for half an hour and be completely silent internally, I mean, that's pretty a little bit optimistic. But if we can just cultivate these moments in the meditation, you know, where we have this little gaps here and there, where the mind is a little bit more peaceful, and we learn to enjoy just letting go of all these thoughts that all seem so important to us. We might feel that, I've really got to think about this. I've got time. You know, I'm not busy. I'm here on the meditation cushion. Now I can really sort that out. But I find the best way to solve problems is just to let them go. And the less you think about them, sometimes the unconscious mind kind of sorts those sort of things out. So, to truly enjoy the silent mind, to enjoy the silence, I think it should be like a comfortable silence. So a silence that you're comfortable with, that you don't feel you need to fill with anything. At the same time, you don't feel that there's things you have to sort of chuck out to push away from the mind. You know, there's things we might be very self-critical when we meditate and say, "Oh, I have all these thoughts I'm trying to get rid of," but that's a little bit counterproductive. So I try and just encourage people to just be comfortable. You know, just to sit here. Tonight we're going to sit for about half an hour later on. So. Yeah, just to sit here comfortably, and if the thoughts come and go, that's all fine. Just to enjoy it, and actually just to reflect on those moments that are quite nice and quiet. And spending time with Ajahn Sen Tutu, we're both really good mates. So we can sort of hang out together and enjoy this sort of companionable silence. You know, we can just sit together and there's not really anything to say, and you're happy for it to be that way. And meditation's very much like that. So as you practice and give it a bit of time. So I think here at the Amadou Meditation Group, we like to encourage people to come back maybe a few sessions and listen to a few different teachers and their different advice that they might give, and to develop, if you can, like a daily practice of maybe a few minutes each day. That's a good place to start. and really is just a matter of patience over a reasonable stretch of time to first sort of notice these states, you know, where the mind is quite still, and to be content with that and to enjoy it and to get a bit of encouragement to practice a little bit more. I find probably the best time to watch the breath is to actually, once you've cultivated this silence, it's actually quite common for the breath to actually sort of fill that silence naturally rather than having to force the mind onto the breath, as a lot of people struggle in the early days of learning meditation, and probably years down the track to that. don't be discouraged. So that's sort of the sort of very basic first stages of meditation, and with a bit of experience you can sort of go on and look a bit more into some of the more probably more uncommon states of meditation that you'll see in the basic method of meditation. There's a whole road to be travelled anyway, so that's not a bad thing. I think to start with, we can probably start the meditation session. We're a little bit early. I think maybe talking for another 10 minutes on silence is probably counterproductive. Afterwards, there's plenty of time for question and answers about the meditation itself, and also for any other questions you might have regarding the life of the monk or what we're up to up at Scott Road and Stocker Road. And then I suppose at the end you'd, so anyone wants to come and have a chat afterwards, we can also do that too. So if you're shy and just want to have a quiet chat, it's okay too. Okay. So, shall we dim the light? That's all good. Okay. I hope I'll still be able to see the clock in 30 minutes. If the sun sets. We might be here for a while, but.
It's okay if you can't see the clock, 40 minutes is good.
40 minutes. We got to play 30 that way. Let's do a full hour and 10 minutes. No, sorry, I'm not going to be that cruel on you. Okay, so the first thing to do is to make sure that the body's comfortable. I see we've all got new furniture here, or new since I was last here, so. Make sure you're not feeling too restricted. If you need to loosen any clothing or scratch any itches or anything like that, you can just take a few minutes to sort of settle into the practice. Monk once said, "There is no fail in Armadale." So just relax, there's no wrong way to go about this. Just try and tune into as the sense of sight sort of fades away with your eyes closed. Enjoy the nice cool breeze from the air conditioning. And enjoy this nice quiet room. comfortable body. It's easy to make the mind comfortable too. Whatever's happening in the here and now is okay, is good enough, is good. Goal of this meditation, just be comfortable with the silence. if the mind is not entirely silent, there'll always be moments there. All you have to do is just to notice. and just be content. Have nothing to do. There's rare times in the day. Make the most of them. nothing to do but relax. Thank you. As we come to the end of the meditation, you might ask yourself, am I doing this right? And the answer is yes. Ring the bell 3 times. You can all stretch and take it easy, and in a short space of time we can ask some questions about meditation if you want to, or okay, Bob, what have you got to ask today?
You mentioned earlier that you view the past and the future as one, and we're better able to let it go.
No. What I meant was, I was talking about the first two stages in the basic method of meditation.
Yeah.
I talked about the So the first stage is about letting go of the past and future.
Yep.
And the second stage, he talks about letting go of the rest of the commentary, which is usually things about what's happening in the present moment, and usually relates to the meditation. And what I was saying is that once you let go of the past and future, there's very little left after that anyway. So I tend to, in my own practice, I don't tend to worry too much about whether a thought is about the past or the present or the future. I just let it be. I guess the more coarse kind of thinking tends to be the thoughts about the past and the future. About there's so much more of it than the present, of course. Whereas the thoughts about the present is usually more about am I doing this right, or is that the breath? Is that the silence? Is that is it this? Is it that? So
Excuse me, John.
Hi.
I think you've turned off.
Okay,
turn it off.
Well,
don't.
Yeah, we've got it here.
It switches off after you don't use it
for a while.
Yeah.
Is that better? Yeah. Oh, okay. Cool. All right. Well, I'll know that the next time. Okay. All right. I don't have you on anymore. Okay. Sorry about that. Modern technology. Yeah, so that's something in my own practice. And I think that after a certain amount of time as a meditator, so if you're a regular meditator, you can sort of learn how to play around and just find things that work for you personally. You don't have to strictly follow anyone's particular instructions. So I think a lot of people have had some really nice meditation when they sort of wandered off the signposted path of meditation. But it does take practice. It does take time to. At the end of the day, I said, you're all meditating right, and that's just the fact that you sit down and you've taken the time to spend 30 minutes sitting in a chair doing nothing, that's actually that's a good step forward. Yeah, it's good. And it's just a matter of practice. Okay. Bob.
Do you have a particular favourite meditation, method, breath?
I think, of late I've just been, just focusing on that silence, not worrying too much.
Just the silence.
Yeah, not worrying too much about taking meditation object. It's kind of like just making sure the more time you spend just cultivating that sort of contented silence, that's really makes the mind quite solid, and I think it'll just naturally take up, be it the breath or metta, it'll take up that object a lot easier if it's if you practice in that way.
How do you spot the silence? I mean,
just relax.
The thought comes and
it's like,
you let it go.
But how do you let it go? It's just like, it's a thought. No worries, it's okay. And you don't want to fight with the mind, because the more you fight, the less comfortable you feel. And it's far better to have a few thoughts on whatever subject than to try and just hold the mind completely still. Looking in the shaving mirror, and I guess if you're a lady, you probably don't shave in the mirror. But anyway, if you look in the mirror doing your makeup or something, and you find that your reflection is shaking, it's not so much the mirror, it's the hand that's holding it is shaking. And if you just sort of let go, you let go of the thoughts, or you let go of the memories, or you let go of whatever mental impressions come up, could be all sorts of things. If you just don't try to sort of evict them, throw them out of the mind, then the mind becomes more still. It's a fairly intuitive thing, so it just takes practice. I think meditation is very much a matter of intuition, of feeling your way in, feeling your way into the deep meditations, and basically, beyond that first stage of meditation, you have to stop giving yourself instructions, verbal instructions. You can at the beginning of the meditation, it's a good idea that's the time to say, if the mind does become silent, the breath is welcome to come in. You can just say that at the beginning, or just try to remember, something came up recently. What was it? There was just something specific. I can't remember what it was. Something specific that I had troubles with in previous meditations, and all I did was to say, "Oh no, I know what it was." I had this really bad habit of tapping. I don't do it when I'm sitting in front of all you people. When I'm sitting in my room,
the foot.
No, when I'm sitting in my room meditating, sometimes I'll get a tune in my head and I'll start tapping, especially if I've been really busy. The body is already quite active, and it just breaks out into this tapping, and I'm like, oh, that's really annoying. I've got to stop doing this. I'm a professional meditator. I can't be like tapping along to music. And it's like, well, okay. So in the next meditation, I sat down and I said, oh, I'm just going to make peace with the tapping. I'm not going to try and control it. I'm not going to try and hold my hand still while I'm sitting here for however long I sit. I'm just going to make peace with it. When I start tapping, I'll just notice it and I'll make peace with it. And I think for that whole session, the hands were really nice and still in it, and it made for a much more comfortable meditation. You're not sort of being unkind to yourself, because it's our natural inclination to self-admonish, to say, you've really got to stop doing that. And as soon as you have that thought, you're losing a bit of the kindness. We always talk about these sort of three factors: the making peace, you know, letting go of control, the kindness, and the gentleness. And I think the kindness is really important, to be kind to yourself and say, well, you know, meditation isn't easy. It's not going to be easy every time. There's always going to be difficult meditation. So that's where we really make progress, is by just making peace with the difficulties. Yeah, and learning the usual. Anyway,
That didn't sound peaceful.
No, it didn't sound peaceful. So we'll just make peace with it. What is happening to her? Maybe she'd be well. It is a hospital after all, so. Or maybe she's just singing out of tune. All right. I was just talking about having that sort of kindness to ourselves, and not telling ourselves off when the meditation doesn't go how we think it should. And yeah, that's sort of how you make progress, by through the difficult meditations, really.
So the bad ones are good ones, then?
The bad ones are good ones. The good ones are good ones. They're all good ones. That's what I say. And again, it was something I said at the Monday night group a while back. I was just saying, you know, it's a very common thought for meditators. You know, am I doing this right? Even after, like, you know, for me, I've been meditating for 14 years or something now, and certainly for the last few years, doing quite several hours a day, and I still, you know, you still you had this thought, it's like, oh, you know, maybe I'm doing this all wrong. And then it's like, no, that's just completely normal to have that thought. And really, you know, when you have a teacher like Ajahn Brahm, he's the abbot down at Serpentine, so he's sort of entrusted us, me and Santucci, to go off and build a new place. But he would never really criticise anyone when they came to talk to him after the meditation. They'd come up and they'd say, oh, you know, I really just wanted to murder you, Ajahn Brahm. He'd say, very good, very good. And I think the only time he ever really says, you know, you're off the track, and it's nothing to do with meditation. It's pretty much about your behaviour, you know. If you're making bad karma and that's what you should watch out for. You know, some moral ethical behaviour in daily life, that's much more of an issue. But I think in meditation, there's no wrong way to meditate, really. And
last question.
Yeah. That's right.
You don't typically or generally do a body sweep.
Me? No. I don't practice it, so I don't I don't feel... It's a very easy technique to teach, because body sweeping is basically... it's been popularised by the some Vipassana movements, the insight meditation traditions. Pardon me. And yeah, basically all it is, it's a very easy meditation technique, is to just focus on different parts of the body and just to relax them, and just to have kind of metta to them, to this loving kindness to various parts of the body, and just to go sort of methodically through the different parts of the body, from maybe from the head down, or from the feet up. You know, start with the baby toe, little toe, and you know, you can go work out the big toe, and then the feet, and just feeling the sensations there, and relaxing, and having that kindness to your own body. I think the only time I taught it that I can remember was when I was under a bit of pressure, right, for this particular meditation group. Yeah, it was in Thomas Embling Hospital in Melbourne, which is a hospital for people who have been found not guilty of crimes due to mental impairment. So I had a...
Oh.
So having had a yeah, having had a history of mental illness myself, you know, suffer from schizophrenia, my friend Lachlan said, oh, you know, can you come out and teach at the hospital? I'm like, oh, gee, okay, yeah, okay. So I went in there and got my retina scanned and went in there, and I had actually prepared earlier by so yeah, so what basically I wanted to have I wanted to be quite prepared for that group, so we went around to all the different wards and invited people along. We had maybe 15 patients there, a lot of them people who had never been on medication before, so never felt any danger, and some of the nurses came along too, the staff, and but I thought the best way to prepare for that was actually really just to go to the BSWA website and look for a talk on body sweeping, and I found a talk by Ajahn Brahma. It was very, very good. I think it might have come from a 9-day retreat talk, but I mean, just for people who are sort of new to meditation, or you know, are looking to branch out, you know, there's many, many different types of meditation, and they're all the right way to meditate, right? I mean, breath meditation is most commonly taught in this, in sort of Ajahn Brahma's monastery. He's very, very that's his main meditation technique, but there's also the meditations on loving kindness, which is typically practiced by just spreading metta to you know, first yourself and then just spreading out throughout. Some people like to do it throughout like a room full of people, the person next to me and then the next person and so forth, this whole sort of progression. And some people like to sort of do visualizations. I know they're quite popular in, or they're sort of quite common in the sort of Tibetan style of meditation. Another good one is actually recollection of generosity. So rather than sort of trying to stop the thinking altogether or the thinking about the past altogether, you actually just recollect maybe just those things. If you've got a few minutes at the end of your day, maybe if you're just lying in bed, you can just think about all of the kind and generous acts throughout the day. You know, just that's a really nice way to fall asleep, I think.
So you use that as an object for a meditation?
Mm. Mm. Yeah, so it's taught by the Buddha. Yeah,
which one's that? Number 39 or 40?
Yeah, I don't know. Well, okay. Yeah, I mean, there's typically these like 40 objects of meditation, and some of them are really, really quite rarely used. Like meditating on like a bowl of water sometimes, or a candle, or yeah, we're talking about just reflecting on our own acts of generosity, our own or if you're, I mean, this is a fairly secular meditation group, but if you happen to be a Buddhist, you might reflect on the qualities of the Buddha and just get a bit of inspiration that way, the teachings. You might even just recollect a particular teaching, and maybe if you're from another tradition, you know, a Christian tradition or a philosophical tradition, yeah, just to reflect on some sort of simple phrase. You don't want to make it too complicated, but just something very simple. Yeah, I know in the Thai forest tradition that my teacher trained in, it was very common to use the mantra Bhutto. So when you're meditating on the breath, it'd be like sort of inhale Bhutto. Bhutto.
And
in Thai, it's just the Buddha. Yeah. The name of the Buddha, Bhutto. Yeah. In Thai, my Thai grammar is pretty bad, but something like that. So, but some people like to have that maybe like a two-syllable phrase to repeat with the breath, usually silent. You're not actually saying it out loud. And I think, yeah, you could even go...
relax.
Yeah, relax, that's right, yeah. Mm. That was like Ajahn Gunhar's. I think it was Ajahn Gunhar. My friend Nito, I've heard, has actually gone to visit him in Thailand, so that's pretty cool. He's this great old monk in Thailand. He's one of Ajahn Brahm's best friends. And he's famous for sort of sitting out in the forest and, you know, just receiving the food. As they do, we have a tradition of just having a shared meal each day. People bring food and we have our food. So sitting there, and this king cobra comes out of the forest and comes right up to him. His head's right there, you know. And Ajahn Gunhar just stroked its head. There we go. Oh, okay. Slithered off. And don't worry, it actually works. It actually works. It was the beginning of summer, and we just moved over to Stocker Road, and I had this experience. Basically, myself, my friend Santuti would be about there, and Rob, our Anagarika now, we've got an Anagarika, he was about where we were sitting, and we're all facing away, and we turn around, and there's this enormous snake about right there. And I thought, okay, all I do is just freeze. I say, just freeze, me, just have kindness towards this animal, and there's probably very deadly animal. It's probably a dew guide, I think, judging by the marking. So very poisonous snake. And yeah, it just looked around and went, okay, and just took off into the amongst the fruit trees. I haven't seen him since. So yeah, that whole sort of where was it? I was talking about Ajahn Gunhar. Anyway, so he it was him and Jambi, Ajahn Jambi. Yeah, so he would teach breath meditation. Breathe in, sabai. Breathe out, sabai. And anyone who knows Thai, it's a very common word. It means, you know, just be happy, you know, be chilled, be relaxed. So, you know, you say, sabai di. And, are you sabai? Yeah, sabai. So, yeah, you can always use a very simple mantra like that with the breath as well. So anyway, yeah, so there's that's just a few of the different types of meditation. So the best thing to do is, if you're interested in a meditation technique such as metta, maybe just go to the Buddhist Society website, and you can just do a quick search of the various guided meditations there. It's very easy, just to pop it on your iPod, or well, they have this. iPods are a bit out there, isn't it? iPhone. You have your iPhone, yeah. You know, whatever. Doesn't have to be an iPhone X or anything. But like an old model will do. And just sit down there and you know, find a comfortable place, and maybe turn the lights down, and you can just meditate there with your earbuds in, and that's a really good way to just try out a new technique. That was how I did my first body sweeping meditation. What I quite liked about Ajahn Brahm's take on that, which I haven't heard otherwise, is just that the way one has not just awareness of the body, parts of the body, but and the sensations, but having kindness as well. So when you're kind to your, just having that, I mean, it's a sort of anthropomorphizing, sort of making into a sort of a person. You know, your calf is that person. You have that sort of just kindness towards it, and you know, you just feel good afterwards. All the muscles are relaxed. Well, it does remind me, when I was a little kid, and I sometimes I couldn't get to sleep. My mum would come in and she'd say, "Oh, well, just think about these various parts of the body and just relax them one by one." So there you go. Maybe my mum was just trying to teach me body sweeping back then. I don't know.
Thank
you, Rachel. No
worries.
Anybody asking you a question?
Yeah, please.
Irina? No, I was going to ask thinking about the snake.
The snake? The snake, yeah. I haven't seen it since. I think we were cleaning out the workshop, and I think there was a lot of sort of... how shall I say, rat droppings and stuff. So when we sweep it all out, he was probably looking for a bit of lunch, And we had a whole stack of stuff outside the workshop. He was probably hanging out in there. I think I just dropped a bag of cement. And I think he freaked out. And then I turned around and was like, whoa! I just told the guy, stop! Don't do anything. He just slid off into the bushes and took one last look back just to check we're not following him.
Were you wearing your safety shoes at the time?
Oh, I was wearing my... I was wearing my Crocs. My thongs. I did actually get my old boots out because we'll be doing some building soon. Yeah, I know.
Have you checked the Land Rover?
I looked in there for snakes. No, there's no snakes in there. No, we'll have a look around. Maybe in the back. I don't think so. Definitely not in the engine compartment. We've got a Land Rover for if anyone wants one. It's a Series 2A. 64, 65. It's done about 65,000 miles, whatever that is in. We're looking for someone who wants to do it up. So there you go. Yeah. No. So anyway, yeah. We've. Please.
They're quite collectible.
They are very collectible. Yes. So it's worth some money.
Particularly the very early one.
Yeah. So I mean, Series 2A. I guess it's the second series. we're looking around for someone who'd like to buy it and do it up. I think because I mean. Probably once they fix it, worth about $15,000 or something.
Yeah. I saw one advertised in a very early one, that was 90 something.
That
was a very low K original Series 1.
Because
They're taking them back to the UK now and putting them back to the factory.
So we bought a...
including snakes.
Yeah.
We bought spotless snakes.
No, just to explain to those who don't know what's going on, we're staying up at Scott Road now, but we've also bought, the Buddhist Society of Western Australia has bought a 10 hectare property out there, so it's actually just behind the little temple we're in now. It's not that little, it's what, four, 5 acres there. But we've got another 26 acres, and it's actually in Rollistone, just over the boundary into Rollistone. So at the moment, there's only two buildings on the property. There's a small just shed that is just a bit of tin really, and then we've got the stables. So these were built with the idea of having a little pony club there, and they never got round to using it, so we've inherited these stables that are completely unused. They've used to store all sorts of junk though, so there's an old Land Rover in there, there's filing cabinets, there's gym lockers. There's no snake. The only snake I've seen is on the Scott Road property. They're fine. Snakes are okay. but we're going to renovate the stables and turn it into a sort of monk's house. So the idea being that me and Santiago will do most of the work, so a lot of sort of gyprock and stud walls and everything. So hopefully then we'll have like 5 rooms for monks, and they should be nice and comfortable, fairly large rooms. We'll put air conditioning in there, and they'll all be quite heavily insulated, both for heat and also for sound as well, because you've got the highway quite close, so, and also living quite close to each other, we're going to put a lot of effort into making a little cave of gyprock. So I've been doing a little bit of study and learning about different kinds of gyprock and steel stud walls, which is like all the bits of metal that go inside, and then you can put in different kinds of sort of insulation to make it as quiet as possible. And I think Ivan Brown would like to take some of the really old monks and put them in there so they can all get
a composter
something like that. Yeah. So that's right. Well, we'll run them up. We'll run
Santa Barbara expansion in the
Well, we'll run them up the hill for lunch each day, and they can come down to. We've got the hospital here if they need to drop by for any services. You're all laughing. This is a joke. Ajahn Brahm has all his old monks here. Someone has to do something with. So we're trying to make it a very nice little comfortable place for people.
Don't say too much about it, because there might be lots of visitors coming up.
Yeah.
But sit up there and meditate.
Oh yeah, yeah. But we'll still be we'll still be having our meals up at Scott Road. So we can do a little lounge around up there. Come up at lunchtime and say hello to the lay people. We can have a chat and. We're not going to be like evacuating the place and moving over the road, or moving over the hill. It is a very nice property over there.
You're going to need a chairlift.
Chairlift? Well,
yeah.
Why not? I think maybe a four-wheel drive would be all right.
Have you called it over the hill?
Hey? Over the hill, that's right. Yeah. It's yeah. Well, last I heard Upasana, a few of you might know Upasana, he's the American monk. He's actually a New Yorker. Yeah,
yeah.
He's kept well into his 70s. He's close to 80 years old now, and I think he's hurt his knee, so he's driving around Bodhnyana in a little mobility mobile. Maybe he needs a little bit more comfort now. But maybe knowing him, he'd probably just like to stay in the forest. But we're very happy to have a place to expand, because Bodhnyana got full a long time ago, and then we kept putting monks in until there's absolutely no room. And Ajahn Brahm basically said to the senior monks, okay, you can go off and just start some new places. I just got a couple of emails today from the folks out at Newbury. So Newbury is a new forest monastery being set up by the Buddhist Society of Victoria it's in a place called Newbury, Newbury Buddhist Monastery. If you go to mbn.org.au, I think. There's a good website there, and I've just seen the three-dimensional models of the new kutis that they're going to have there. And there's going to be a kuti for Ajahn Brahm, very plush kuti, very nice kuti. A kuti is a monk's hut, and there's also a sangha house there, so a building for people to come and have their meals and or at least breakfast, and maybe a library there and a meditation room and a place for sick monks and that sort of thing. So. It's all good, and because Newbury is extremely cold, it's up in the Central Highlands, so it's sort of west of Melbourne, northeast of Ballarat, and south of Bendigo. It's up about 800 metres, and they get snow there in the wintertime. So they're actually putting in in-floor heating. So they'll be very comfortable in there in the wintertime.
Did Nito suggest that?
You think of Medita. Medita. The Finnish monk. He knows all about he's from Finland, so he'd
all
know.
Go there.
He'd know all about
Finn comfort.
So it's really good. I'm glad that's all taking off, and hopefully they'll be able to start building soon. But it is actually a very secluded place. It's a very, very nice, quiet area. Whereas here, we're sort of in the suburbs, so it's a different feel. But also, it's convenient for the monks. We can go out and just pick up stuff and go to Bunnings, that sort of stuff, really easy. And it's also very, very easy for a lot of people to come and support us as well. So. People who want to come and visit that don't have the time to go down to Serpentine can come in, drop in, have lunch, or just talk about meditation. And
sorry, Ajahn, for the general people, what's the protocol for visiting you in Scotland?
Okay, yeah. So the best time to come up is around in the morning, 10:30, 11. We usually just we're usually just working around the around the temple there, cleaning, doing projects and stuff. Occasionally we'll be across the road, but we're usually back quite early. But then there's, just like a Bodhinyan, there's a shared meal, so people just bring a plate of food, and there's a bit of a roster there, so the same people sort of come each week, and each day of the week, and then we also have people just dropping in at certain times. I've had a few of the Thais come along, which is really nice, like Sunpop, and we see a few of them, and Lek, so that they're some of the Thai supporters that we know well from Bodhinyana, and they like to come and see us. So yeah, if you come around the meal time, then Ajahn Santuti takes time to talk to people after the meal. But it's a bit more comfortable than Bodhinyana.
Is it more casual?
I was going to say, yeah, rather than sort of sit up there, you know, with all these pictures of the great monks around, you just sit outside on the patio, and the beautiful view up there. It's really quite lovely up there on the hill. You can actually, you got views of the valley, and you can sit at the table, have a chat. Yeah, why not? And yeah, he can give you meditation advice, or just have a chat about whatever you want to talk. Yeah, and also, yeah, there's a Monday night group, so it's definitely more informal than this. It's just, we've got about an hour, and there's quite a few regulars, and a few people, new people turn up. So it's about an hour, a bit of chit chat, a little bit of talk about meditation, another half hour guided meditation as well. So yeah, it's just up the end of Scott Road. So yeah, just go down Brookton. Go that way, right onto Brookton Highway, and then just up on the hill there. Yeah, not far away at all. Probably about 8 minutes in good traffic. Yeah.
Ajahn, can I put the brakes on for a sec?
Yeah.
Is there anybody else with a question? Oh, God.
Yeah, kind
of. I've heard a few times with the Ajahns and monks say that when they travel, they've got no money. So how does that work, like when you go to an airport and you've got a layover, or you've got no money?
Yeah, sleep on the floor. It's pretty crazy. I mean, I travelled to I've travelled, you know, within Australia, obviously, usually it's just from one hop to another place. But one year I went to Sri Lanka, so that was the craziest day. So, you know, after the meal, I think we about 12 o'clock headed up to the airport, and then going through customs, and then flying to Malaysia. And I had to I had about an hour and a half or something to get to the next flight. And to anyone who's been to Kuala Lumpur Airport, there's like this train. So there's a train that goes. Eventually, you figure out it goes from one place to another and then back again. There's only two stations. I was looking and going, where do we go? And it was pretty tight there. I only just got to the connecting flight, so that was a bit scary. And then the hop to Colombo, and you arrive about midnight Colombo time, so about 2.5 hours before Perth, and went through the whole process of going through customs, and it's like, he said, "Oh, you know, have you got your visa?" I said, "No, I've got this stamp in my passport." And he looks and goes, points me to this back room, you know, sneak in, this rather large bureaucrat there, so looks at it and goes, like, see a little book, and says, "Go on your way." I'll put that in my passport, and I got out, and I was lucky the monks were there waiting to pick me up. And we had another 3 hour drive to a place called Nawiena in it's west of, east of Kurunegla. So it was a pretty crazy trip. By the end of that, I arrived at the monastery, and I just, yeah, my mind was in quite a state for the next couple of days. So, but we made it, you know, we made it. I never at any time handled money. It's a rule we keep very strictly in Ajahn Brahm's monastery. His monks very good at that. Sure, plenty of monks handle money out there, especially in traditional Buddhist countries. It's just expected. It's just too hard not to handle money, they think. But yeah, you can do it.
You have to pay for your visa.
Mm.
So certain countries would ask you for $25 to get in.
Yeah, so
you have to carry it with you.
Well, prior to this trip, it had all been organised by Ajahn Aryananda. So he was the abbot of, or not the main teacher at Nalyana. So this was all organised for me. I didn't have to do anything.
But if it's not a place where there's monks in there and you gotta go, you gotta carry.
Never happened. I mean, Ajahn Brahm goes all over the world, and he never handles money. No, never.
How about people know him? He's different.
No, I think I don't know. It's nothing. It's something that's never come up to me. No, it's always been. It's always been taken care of, I think. Yeah.
I used to go to Thailand every week. I think two or maybe three times I've seen Ajahn Brahm on the same plane.
Yeah, okay.
And he comes up the steps.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know whether he books the economy or what, but as soon as he sees Ajahn Brahm, stick him up the pointy end.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
And then when you get off the plane in Suvarnabhumi Airport in Bangkok,
Suvarnabhumi, yeah.
You get on the like a big bus takes you to the terminal.
Yeah.
And Ajahn Brahm's first one down the steps, and he sits up the front cab with the driver, and everybody else is shuffled in the back.
I did the same thing. I went to
customs in Suvarnabhumi Senanambi in airport, Bangkok. They've got their own customs back. And it's actually got all the top.
Yeah.
Monks.
Just monks, I did the same thing, I went to, before going to Sri Lanka, the second time, that time I actually went via, on a 9-day, 9-day pilgrimage with Book. She just handled everything. But sometimes you'll come along and just wave it at the front, don't worry. Just wave at the front of the queue because in Thailand you often get treated like royalty, really.
Mm-hmm.
You sometimes see the country monks from Ubon Ratchathani and Ubon Thani and places like that where they're out in the bush.
Yeah.
And they get them down to the airport and you see the escalators.
Yeah.
And they're all pushing each other on because they don't want to get on.
Okay.
I've never seen one before.
Bit scary. Okay. Escalators. Yeah, escalators can be scary when you wear ropes like this.
Yeah.
You really don't want to get them caught. You have to sort of. You had to sort of tuck them up.
Not a good look on YouTube.
No. There's always someone there with a phone on it. Terrible.
Yeah.
I thought that's the road.
Okay. So it is now 8:30. So we have to stop. I'm so sorry. It's good fun. Okay.
Thank you, Ajahn J.R. for giving us the snake story and the zero gnomes. All different stories, thank you. And they lead us to meditation as well in silence. It's wonderful. And if you have any if you have private matters that you wish to discuss with the monk, then please remain behind and ask him. There are some free literature in the back on the table. And if you want to borrow anything from the library, please check with David. And Jackie is left just a minute ago. Books and CDs for sale are on the right side of the table. Please see David if you would like to purchase something. If you wish to find any information about BSWA, you will find it at bswa.org. Podcast downloads are available from the same place, podcast.bswa.org. Any extras to be mentioned? Yes. Sorry, I forgot to mention this one. On the 23rd of March, there is a on Saturday, 23rd March 19, there is a half a day meditation retreat in Kempscott, in Scott Road.
What are you doing?
Hello. You're switching me off.
You're all going to hear about that. You're all going to hear about the afternoon meditation retreat.
And it's a half a day meditation as well, so we all can soak in and be a better person at the end of the day, half a day. Yeah, I think that's all the announcements, and thank you everyone for coming tonight, and thank you Ajahn Jaya as well. Thank you.